The following message is by Pastor Andrew Beddow, pastor of First Baptist Church of Orchard, Texas. More information on First Baptist Church Orchard can be found at fbcorchard.com.
So we made it through Christmas, right? This is the first Saturday after Christmas, which means that we begin to get ready to rig down from the holidays. We still have New Year's coming, which for some people is a big deal. Having two kids, it's not that big of a deal for me. It just means that I go to bed at 10 o'clock on a different night. I mean, it's just, it's the same thing. But what it means in our house is that we begin the process of detoxing from Christmas, right? All of the bad food in the refrigerator goes in the trash because we've eaten way more than we should have eaten. My wife has hit her decoration toxicity point where she has done with all the Christmas decorations and all the dislocation that's caused in our family, and she is tearing stuff down, right? Tearing stuff down, throw it in the box and get it out of my house. Move everything back the way that it was. And we've reached the point where we got the Christmas toys for the kids, and now they are displacing the old toys that they no longer play with. And it created in our house this really interesting byplay last night as my wife is frantically throwing out toys and boxes and stuff like that. And my daughter is trundling around, and she just looks shell-shocked because she doesn't know what's going on. And she's got her little froggy, and she's got her thumb in her mouth, and she's just looking around like, "Mommy, please don't throw me away." Like, her whole world had been turned upside down because we were getting rid of some stuff and putting new stuff in there. It was this very, very traumatic time for her. And while it was a little bit funny, it was also kind of sad. And I think a lot of times at the holidays, it can be like that for us. As we go through this period of transition and turmoil, as we remember Christmases and holiday seasons in the past, the family celebrations that we used to have, and maybe we feel a little bit of guilt because it's not as nice as we think we remember it might have used to been, right? There's this feeling of dislocation as we find the world spiraling away from what we remember it being. There's a reason that the holiday season is for many people the most depressing time of the year. All of the joy that we're told should be here, it's sometimes lacking. It's sometimes missing. And we don't really know why. And then when you add on top of all of this, this seemingly unending move of our culture away from Christianity, it can become downright depressing. This holiday season, we were all treated to the spectacle of another battle in the culture war. We had Duck Dynasty and this struggle with their parent station, and people were up in arms, and there was news reports, and if anybody here is on Facebook, you couldn't go an hour without a new Duck Dynasty post, and back and forth, and you know the gay coalition was saying one thing, you know, all these conservative groups were saying something else, and it was this very, very polarizing time. I remember for several days in a row, some of our relatives who are on more of the liberal side posted post after post after post about Christianity and how passé it is, and it was disconcerting to me. We look at our culture, and at times at Christmas, we see this image of the candle of Christianity flickering out in the West as we move further and further away from what we used to be. And we have to remember at times like this that God is in control. Right? See, Christ was born into a poor and vulnerable family under the worst possible political conditions imaginable. He was born, though, at just the right time and in just the right place, because in the midst of all the turmoil, God was in control. The central point of the birth narrative of Christ, everything that we read in Matthew here, goes to show that God is fully in control. See, God is in control when evil men are in power. Herod called himself king of the Jews, but he was neither a true king nor a real Jew. Instead, he was an evil, calculating, and thoroughly unpleasant man who found himself in control of God's people at the moment of their greatest triumph. We read in Matthew 2, 1 through 2, it says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him. And as we look at this, we need to understand something about Herod. See, Herod wasn't even really a Jew. He called himself king of the Jews, but he was really an Arab that had been placed in control of the Jews by the Romans. He was a foreign overlord that was there to control the Jews and keep them in line. And to understand how he got to this place, you have to go back hundreds and hundreds of years in the past and see this turmoil and this trial that the Jewish people had come through. See, Christ comes at the culmination of 600 years of crisis. Imagine that, 600 years. The United States has been around for maybe 250, 275 years, right? Maybe a little bit longer. These people had gone through 600 years of national crisis. It all started in 590 when the temple in Jerusalem fell. The Jews were carted off into captivity, and they suffered conqueror after conqueror after this. They were conquered by the Babylonians. The Persians came in and conquered the Babylonians. Right? Then the Alexander the Great and the Greeks came through and conquered them. Then when Alexander died, his generals split apart, and there was wars all over the place as these generals fought over the kingdom. The Jews became part of a dynasty out of Syria until the king of that dynasty decided that he wanted to erect a statue of himself in the very Holy of Holies, on the Holy of Holies of the temple, so that they would worship him. And the Jews rose up under the Maccabees and threw them down and had their own little state for 100 years. But that didn't last. See, they became corrupt, more and more corrupt, and more divided until they finally had a huge civil war. And the Romans had to come in and settle everything. The Romans marched in, and they took Antipater, the father of Herod, and put him on the throne and said, can you control these crazy people? Because we don't want to deal with them. And so Herod's father took over, and Herod took over from his father. And so we find ourselves with Herod, who is not a legitimate Jewish king, and who was actually a pretty nasty guy. If you actually read the history of this guy, it's really twisted. He's married like 10 times, kills 3 of his wives. I mean, he makes Henry VIII look like a choir boy. This guy was a nasty, nasty guy. He killed his own people. He crushed them with taxes so he could build these huge buildings. Augustus, who was no saint himself, said it would be better to be a pig than a member of Herod's family. And that should tell you something. But see, Christ came at just the right time, in just the right place. The Greek Empire under Alexander was bad, and it oppressed the Jews, but it created this international culture, right? There was this language that pervaded the entire area from India to Italy. People understood Greek. They understood Greek literature. They could read Greek. So when the Gospels were written and they went out along the trade routes, people could read them. Right? Under the Romans, they had built roads everywhere so that you could travel in relative safety from England to Egypt. And the Romans had made peace with the Persians, so there was this tension across the border. See, Christ came at just the right time, in just the right place. God had created a situation where the gospel could spread through the world like wildfire. Because God was in control. The ancient world did not have a lock on cruelty either. As we sit in America at the beginning of the 21st station, we find ourselves in a situation where we're ruled by evil men. Whichever party. We kill thousands of unborn children every year. If there's somebody that disagrees with us around the world, we assassinate them. Or we put them in prison. Or we torture them. We're a nation founded on religious liberty. And yet we find ourselves tottering at the edge of censorship and oppression. We've destroyed the concept of family. And we mock marriage. But God is still in control. When evil men are in power and the nation is in turmoil, the story of Christmas teaches us that God is in control. God is in control when the rulers are evil, but he's also in control when the religious leaders are clueless and corrupt. When the guys who are supposed to know what's going on have no idea. See, the scripture teaches us when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, and he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. And they said, in Bethlehem in Judea. For it's what the prophet wrote when he said, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people. See, the Jewish religious authorities knew about the Messiah. They knew what he was supposed to be like. They knew, for example, that he would be a guide that would be given to them to establish a new covenant. In Jeremiah 31, it says, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant of before, when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke the covenant, though I was husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the new covenant that I will make with the people of Israel after that time. I will put my laws into their mouths and write it onto their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. See, they knew that this new covenant would be brought by a messianic king, that there would be someone who would rise up, who would bring in this new covenant. Isaiah 9, 1 through 6 says, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. For to us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace, and of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. They knew that this messianic king would come from the line of David. Prophecy after prophecy after prophecy had told them that this would happen. Isaiah says, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit, and the Spirit of the Lord will be on him. Jeremiah says, in the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch. A king whose reign will be wise, who will do what is just and right in the land. In his days, Judah will be saved, and Israel will live in safety. They knew what the Messiah would be like. Finally, we see from Micah that they knew where the Messiah would be born. They knew that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. And you got to understand that Bethlehem is 5 miles away from Jerusalem. It's a day's walk for a lazy person. And yet, despite all of this, when word came that the Messiah that they had been waiting for 600 years, when the culmination of all the turmoil, when he came, you know what they did? Nothing. They sat on their hands and did nothing. The Jewish religious Authorities were so divided, so distracted, paying attention to so many things that were not important, that they couldn't tell when God came as a man. God had come to earth as Emmanuel, and they missed it completely. When God came to his people were asleep at the switch. But God came at just the right time, in just the right place, because he is in control. And even though this seems like the worst possible situation for the Messiah to be born in, we see that God is working within his people and outside of his people among the Gentiles. Ancient Roman authors report that there is this feeling about this time that there will be a Messiah, that there will be a saving figure who's going to arise. There's these rumblings that are going all around the Mediterranean as people are expecting this. The Romans think it's going to be one guy. The Egyptians think it's going to be somebody else. But there's this expectation. The Hebrew scriptures have been translated into Greek and in Aramaic and into Babylonian, and it pervaded the cultures. And people were reading the scriptures and understood that God was doing something. The Old Testament was available and understood. And in far-off Persia, God is working in the hearts of some pagan astrologers. He is revealing himself to them. Now, these are men, learned men, in the court of the Babylonian or Persian king, that spent their entire lives staring at the stars, trying to divine the will of God through astrology. They practiced magic. They practiced divination and these different arcane black arts. These are pagan priests. These are not the people that God comes to, right? These are the opposite of the people that God is supposed to come to. And yet in the midst of their sorcery and in their divination, they get a message from God. They get a message that the Messiah is coming, and they don't understand it, and they don't really know what it means. They've got the prophecies in the Jewish scriptures that are there, and they see that there's going to be a king born to the Jews, but they don't really know what that means. But somehow, through some kind of phenomenon, they know where the Lord is supposed to be born. And so they pack up all their stuff and they get gifts and they put them on camels and they set out for a 900-mile journey. You got to be pretty sure to take a 900-mile journey on a camel, right? Camels stink and they spit and it's nasty and it's dangerous, but they went on a 900-mile journey on camels to go find this guy. See, God was preparing the hearts of the Gentiles. And when they received the message of God, they went. And when they found him, when they finally found him, a peasant child living in a little house in a small village, they didn't turn their nose up and go, "Oh, well, this obviously isn't the kid we were looking for." They fell on their knees in worship because God had prepared them. Their hearts had been prepared, and when they saw him, their hearts broke. Because God was in control. Sometimes it seems like the religious officials of today have no idea what is going on. Like they are completely lost. Like they pay attention to things that mean nothing, and they ignore the things that are desperately important. I'm reading a book about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a man who was martyred by the Nazis, and it talks about his young life growing up in the theological circles in the 30s and the 40s, and one of the major developments that came out of this was this guy, Karl Barth, who had this amazing idea. Read the Bible as if God actually existed. And that blew people away. Like, that was revolutionary. People are like, whoa, God really exists? But you're a theologian. That's what you do for a living. That's like what you're supposed to be about. But it was that alien. Right? We come out of that culture. We've got priests who are abusing children and doing horrible things, and evangelists who are embezzling money, and people who are building huge churches that serve small groups of people while other people starve. God is in control. Even when the religious leaders are clueless and corrupt and the system seems broken, God is still in control. See, God's in control when the rulers are evil and when the religious leaders are clueless, and he's also in control when his people are helpless, when his people are powerless, when they're broken. Christ was powerless by worldly standards. You cannot become more powerless than Christ was. He was a little baby born to a teenage mother and a poor father in a small village in a conquered people. And yet he had come to overturn the powers of the world. He was born vulnerable, and God used him to humble the strong. The family of Christ had come from Nazareth, as far north in the country as you could possibly go. And yet somehow they had found a house to live, found a house to live in for almost 2 years at this point. The family of Christ is powerless. There is no one there to protect them. And they have lived under the nose of the most ruthless king in Jewish history. And they've been safe. The family of Christ is desperately poor. And yet they will very soon go on a journey to Egypt and live there for several years. Even when people have nothing, when they are completely powerless, God is in control. In fact, often we'll find in the Gospel of Matthew that it is the poor and the powerless and the broken that God uses to do his will. He uses a child to humble an empire. He uses Gentiles to humble the religious people. He uses the small, the poor, the last, the least, to break the pride of the mighty. See, God is fully and completely in control. This has all been part of his plan from the very beginning. And now, when the situation has ripened, when all of the dominoes are in just the right place, he is about to do something extraordinary. He's about to flip the whole thing over on its head. He's about to do what we will find in Matthew is called the Great Reversal, where the first become last, and the last become first, where the poor enter the kingdom of God and the rich get turned away empty, where the prideful are humbled and the meek are exalted. That's what God comes to do. So what does that mean to us? What does it mean to understand that God is in control? What are you worrying about today? What consumes you so that you can't sleep at night? God is in control of that. He's in control. He's got it. You need to stop worrying and stop being paralyzed by worry and start acting. I can remember when I was in the Marines, that was something that they would tell you over and over and over again, that you should not become paralyzed by indecision. You can't just sit there and vapor lock and oh, what am I going to do? Left or right? Left or right, just make a decision. Do something. Do something. Keep moving. Don't bog down. Because the guy that gets bogged down is the guy that dies. The guy that gets bogged down and stops moving is the guy that dies. What is paralyzing you right now? God has control over it. Stop worrying about the country. God's got it. Is there a persecution right around the corner? Probably. There probably is. I'm not going to lie to you. But guess what? There's been lots of persecutions in the past. And Christians get through them. If persecution breaks out against Christians in the United States, it will be because God is testing us and purifying us. And the church thrives in persecution. Complaining about the president or the Congress doesn't do anything. In fact, it's counterproductive because it causes us to hate other people. It polarizes us and keeps us from doing our job. And our job is to make new Christians. That's what we're supposed to do. That's why we have been bought. We have a mission. We have to stop being polarized and do it. The Bible teaches us that we are to respect and pray for our leaders. And I want you to realize when that was written, they didn't have a great government. Paul wrote this to people that were in the midst of persecution and not the biting sarcasm kind like we get. Like the being fed to lions kind of persecution. They're supposed to respect their leaders and pray for them. That's our job. God is in control of this church. Believe me when I tell you, I stay up late at night thinking about this church, worrying about this church, dreaming for this church, and I would love to have 100 people in here. God is in control. We need to do what God has for us to do in the community that we're in. We can't worry about Riverbend, and we can't worry about River Point, and we can't worry about River whatever. They are who they are. We are who we are. We have to do the work that God has for us to do in the community that we have here. There are plenty of lost people to go around. Believe me, there's plenty of lost people to go around. We have to have the eyes to see them. They may not look like us. They may not act like us. They may not dress like us. But they are lost, and God wants us to get them. He wants us to bring them in and to save them, to build a community that loves all people and shows all of them the love of Christ. Guess what? God is in control of your family. God is in control of your family. We have got to stop worrying about the things that we cannot control and begin to work on the things that we can control. Stephen Covey talks about a circle of effectiveness and a circle of concern. And stress in our lives comes from the fact that we care about things that we have absolutely no control over. And it takes away from the things that we can affect. Moms, you are not going to keep your children perfectly safe all the time. Can't do it. I got two of them. I know what they do. Came out the other day and my daughter's dancing on the table. Right, she's figured out how to climb up there. Now, I can discipline her, I can do whatever, but if she wants to jump off the table onto her head, there's not a lot that I can do to keep that from happening, short of leg irons. And CPS is really against that, so you can't do that. Shock collar too, so. You can't control them all the time. You can't keep them safe all the time. God is in control, and He loves your children more than you could ever love them. Dads, you cannot make your children successful. I want my son to be successful more than anything else. I want him to be good in school and prosperous. And you know what? I got no control. I can teach him stuff. I can be nurturing. I can't make him be somebody. I can't keep him from making the mistakes that I've made. I can tell him about them. But part of the curse of parenthood is making mistakes and seeing your kids make the same mistakes. That's life. We can do as good as we can do. What can we do? We can make every moment with our family count. We can be present with our children. We can make choices in our life that allows us to spend time with our family and not time at work, and not time at sports, and not time at everything else. We can spend time with our families. We can teach them to love each other, and we can show them what it looks like to love the Lord. These are the things that we can control. We can't control how people treat us, but we can control how we treat other people. I cannot make people not be mean and nasty to me, but you know what? I can forgive them. And I cannot strike back. So as we come to the end of the holiday season, as we come through New Year's and then off into the winter, I ask you to do this. When it overwhelms you, when you can feel that wave curling over the top, and you're about to get rolled and slammed into the sand, relax. Because God is in control. And God has this. God has this. Bow your heads with me, please.